Today I'm talking with Olivia Britton, who's the head solicitor at the Tauranga Community Law Centre, which is called Baywhite, and I'm going to be talking to her about the role that community law centres play in facilitating access to justice, but also as someone who works at the coalface with people who often struggle with access issues, about what lawyers can be doing to make it easier for people to access the services that they need.
I've been at the Community Law Centre since June 2021, so I've just gone 2 years.
And what were you doing prior to that?
I was a barrister, practising almost exclusively in the criminal jurisdiction.
And what was it that made you take the decision to jump into a Community Law Centre?
I am quite community-minded. I wanted to join the Community Law Centre to expand my areas of expertise, because I primarily practiced criminal law for the last 14 years prior to joining the Community Law Centre. So it was to broaden my areas of expertise and to try and help people that were not going to get legal help anywhere else.
And so what is the role of running a Community Law Centre?
So I'm the managing solicitor at the Community Law Centre. So I'm responsible for managing the team of lawyers. The Tauranga and Baywhite Community Law Service has two offices, one in Whakatane and one in Tauranga. We have four lawyers in the Tauranga office and three lawyers in the Whakatane office. So my responsibility is really to manage the team of lawyers and supervise all of the work that comes through the door.
So what sorts of work does come through the door?
A broad range of work comes through the door. No 2 days are the same. The biggest areas we cover would be family law, employment law, and tenancy law, with criminal following closely behind that.
And what kinds of assistance is the Community Law Centre able to provide?
So we're primarily funded by the Ministry of Justice to provide legal information to everybody in the community, legal education to everybody in the community, and legal advice to those that meet our eligibility criteria, and that's, as you'll appreciate, financial criteria largely, although we do have some discretion in terms of if someone has a particular vulnerability, such as a disability, we can exercise our discretion in terms of that criteria.
Yeah. And so are lawyers from community law centres appearing in court or doing that sort of work for clients?
Yes, on occasion. While we're primarily funded to provide initial legal advice, there are occasions where we do provide representation to clients, although that is limited and needs to be so that we can continue to meet the needs of our clients on a day-to-day basis.
And so what happens for clients who do need that representation but can't get it from you guys?
Well, if I can use an example, perhaps in the civil jurisdiction, it happens a lot. So often we don't have the resources to represent the client or to continue representing the client above and beyond the initial legal advice, and we have great difficulty in finding a lawyer who is prepared to act on civil legal aid for a client. And in fact, we've had about three or four recent examples of cases where we've been unable to find a lawyer to act on legal aid for a client, and what happens to them? Essentially, they end up self-represented litigants.
And I'm guessing that the outcomes in those cases are probably not what they might otherwise be?
Correct.
So how many cases are you dealing with on a typical day?
On a typical day, we'd be dealing... Each lawyer generally sees around three clients a day each. And we've sort of got seven lawyers at the moment, soon to be eight. So three clients per lawyer.
There's quite a lot of volume, especially if some of those people aren't able to be assisted. Of that, you know, 20-odd clients a day, how many of them would you say you're able to resolve things for them?
A large majority we are able to resolve for them, to be fair. A lot of them we refer primarily to legal aid providers, whether it be family legal aid provider or a criminal legal aid provider. As I say, civil legal aid providers are few and far between. So we are able to resolve quite a number of the matters that walk through our doors, but there are others that are not resolved.
And so the gap really is around that civil legal aid component in particular.
That's where I see the gap, the inaccessibility of legal aid, the level, the shortage of legal aid providers in the civil jurisdiction, and the fact that civil litigation is inaccessible and hugely expensive.
So what sorts of volunteer work gets done through community law centres?
Well, I think if we're talking about access to justice, I think a lot of the people that we see at the community law centre, first, for many, are not even able to identify that they have a legal issue. They don't know their rights, they don't know how to protect their interests, and by and large, those are the kinds of people we see. And a really good example of that, if I can give you an example of a case that I think is quite illustrative of what community law centres do. Very recently, we had an 80-year-old client come and see us, and she lived alone in a single one-bedroom flat. Her health deteriorated quite significantly to the point where her mobility was affected. She wanted a friend to come over and assist her, as she wasn't a very trusting lady, so she wanted her friend to come and assist her on a day-to-day basis until she became well. Her tenancy agreement with the landlord did not allow her to have visitors overnight, and it had a specific time period for visitors to be able to visit her during the day. Now, she came to us really on the basis that I need my friend to come and help me, and my landlord saying, no, you can't have your friend because this is what your tenancy agreement says. So when we obtained the tenancy agreement and reviewed it, we realised that both of those clauses were unlawful and unenforceable. And we wrote to her landlord and advised her landlord of that. And as a result of that, the landlord has now agreed that that is the case and is sending her a new tenancy agreement with those clauses deleted. So she's now able to have her friend come and go whenever she pleases.
I mean, that's a real success story just straight off the bat. But I'm interested by what you say that a lot of people don't understand that they have legal issues or don't know what their rights are. Would you say then that the people who manage to find their way to you might just be the tip of the iceberg compared to the people who just don't understand that they could do something about the situation they find themselves in?
Totally. Absolutely. I think, you know, access to justice is about having the means and the opportunity and the knowledge to approach or resolve your dispute. And I don't think a lot of people have that knowledge or the institutional knowledge that you might need to approach a particular issue or resolve a particular dispute. There's a lack, in my view, of institutional awareness, and I think navigating complex government processes and the like is very difficult for a lot of people.
What do you think is the solution to that sort of lack of knowledge in the general population?
Increased education, finding better ways to relay legal information, thinking of different ways that legal information can be relayed to the general public, because the people have issues, you know, whether it be with literacy, understanding, those sorts of things. So some real thought, in my view, needs to go into better ways of keeping the community or the public informed in terms of legal information.
You mentioned things like barriers to literacy in your answer there. Obviously, a lot of the people using a community law centre are lower income.
Mm-hmm.
But are there other barriers that you see quite frequently or things that a lot of your clients have in common with one another that makes it harder for them in particular to access legal services?
We see a number of clients with disabilities. I think there's many barriers. I could write a long list, but for example, connectivity issues. They might live rurally and not have internet access. A lot of our clients don't have phone. There are financial issues. There are people that don't even have a copy of their birth certificate, so they're not able to obtain identification. As a result of that, they're not able to obtain a Ministry of Social Development benefit. There are numerous disadvantages that I think impact on people's ability to access justice.
So we've talked about a number of these different barriers that exist to people accessing justice and accessing legal services. As someone who's really working at the coalface on that question, if you were to write a wish list of things you'd like to see done to make it more accessible, what other sorts of things would be at the top of your list?
The top of my list would be greater funding for community law centres to be able to resource more fully, lower cost alternative dispute resolution procedures in terms of avoiding the need to go to court all the time, legal aid system improvements, obviously, in terms of the financial eligibility criteria and in terms of the shortage of providers practicing legal aid work. And I think they're intertwined in the sense that lawyers are not generally attracted to legal aid work because of the low remuneration rates. And then, of course, the stringent financial eligibility criteria, it makes it very difficult for some people, to those people that fall through the gaps, to access legal aid. The other matter on my wish list would be more guidance for self-represented litigants. And I'm not sure what form that would take, but I think that a lot of thought needs to be given to guiding people through the court process when they are self-represented, whether that be by way of interactive videos so that they're accessible and understandable to everybody.
You mentioned in that answer, you know, more cost-effective pathways for dispute resolution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, one of the pathways that does exist is the disputes tribunal,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that's the terms for the disputes tribunal have been in active discussion recently. Do you think that the current model for the disputes tribunal is fit for purpose?
I do think it's fit for purpose, but I think the problem with the disputes tribunal is the jurisdictional limit of $30,000. And I believe that the Rules Committee have proposed reforms to look at increasing that limit to $70,000 or $100,000 by consent. And I totally support that proposal because it is going to capture and a lot more cases, and it's going to mean that the litigation aspect is a lot more cost effective for people. So I fully support the raising the jurisdictional cap. But I do generally think, in terms of the forum of the disputes tribunal, it's user friendly and it's designed for the layperson.
One thing that has been in discussion is making pro bono hours a mandatory part of the process for practicing lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that would be beneficial to the kind of issues that you're seeing? Do you think it's something that community law centres would benefit from if all lawyers were required to contribute in some way?
I think it's important for lawyers to undertake at least some pro bono work. No matter what area they practice in. There is Te Ara Ture, which is the pro bono clearinghouse, and there are a number of lawyers registered across the country to provide pro bono work, but as I understand it, that number could quite happily increase.
What is Te Ara Ture?
Te Ara Ture is a pro bono clearinghouse, essentially. It is a portal-based system where pro bono lawyers can volunteer their services, and community law centres can make referrals to Te Ara Ture in relation to particular clients in the hope that one of the lawyers volunteering their services will pick up that particular case.
Is it well subscribed with lawyers?
I don't think that there is enough knowledge about Te Ara Ture amongst the legal community. I only learned of its existence upon joining the Community Law Centre and hadn't heard of it prior to joining the Community Law Centre, so I don't think it's well enough known, and more could be done in that space.
So talking bigger picture then, what sort of things is the Community Law Centre working on at the moment?
At the moment, we are really focused on building our profile within the community. We have rebranded into the old signage was very dated. We've rebranded. We've made an effort to connect with other social agencies to make sure that they are aware of our existence so that they're able in turn to support their clients. We have had a big focus on increasing education, legal education sessions, and making sure that we can promote those education sessions throughout our region, and we cover, our community law centre covers from Te Kaha through to Waihee, so a relatively big catchment area. So we're making a real effort to make our presence known and our availability known by getting out there and connecting with others in the community.
Now, obviously, community law centres are one of several services, and they're often mentioned in the same breath as organisations like Citizens Advice Bureau and groups like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is unique about what a community law centre provides?
What's unique about what the community law centre provides is that we can provide, because we have qualified lawyers, we can provide actual legal advice. I mean, I'm not aware of any other organisation that provides free legal advice to people on low incomes.
So you've mentioned that one of the real barriers to people accessing legal services is a lack of education. I'm just interested in drilling down on that a little bit. What sort of base level knowledge would you say your clients have about the law and what laws apply to them?
Very little, if any. The majority of our clients do not have any understanding of their rights or of New Zealand legislation.
And do they have any pathway for trying to find answers to those sorts of questions?
There are, of course, websites available, such as New Zealand legislation, but that, once you get, if they're able to get to that site or to get to the legislation online, the issue really becomes, are they going to be able to understand the legislation? And 9 times out of 10, the answer is going to be no.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.